the undeniable weakness of Donald J. Trump. On the eve of Super Tuesday and the Republican debate in Houston, I give advice to Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz on how to take down this pretended strongman on this episode of Scott Ott Podcast, episode 33, right now. I'd like to start off with expectations for tonight's GOP debate. This is Thursday, February 25th, for those who may be listening to this in the distant future on another planet or something like that. And I want to start off with what I think Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio should do in this debate this evening. And there's been a lot of discussion about this. How are they going to handle things? They have tended to spend this debate time attacking each other, generally over the issue of immigration. I have said in the past that I think that Ted and Marco have left people with the impression that their positions are either vastly different or nearly identical, but nobody really knows. Because they're constantly snipping each other. They're constantly suggesting or outright saying that the other person is lying. And then afterward, their campaigns send out a blizzard of information proving that the other person was lying. And so I think that basically the American public, and this is just not the American public, this is human nature. The human mind, when confused, says no. The human mind, when confused, says no. And so if you set up a situation where you're almost intentionally trying to confuse people, trying to muddy the waters, trying to complicate the issues or bringing complicated issues to the table, and then having a debate over minutia, as Jeb Bush described it during the last debate, arguing over a bill that never passed, I think people get frustrated with that. And people know that going forward, you're not going to be in Congress, you're not going to be in the Senate snipping at each other, you're going to be the President of the United States of America. I don't want to know what does a congressman do when it comes to immigration, I want to know what does the executive do? What does the President of the United States of America do when it comes to immigration? What is your plan? Now, you may start going after the other guy and saying, well, when he was in the Senate or when he was in the Florida House or whatever, he said this and then he did that. I'm telling you, a legislative body is a hot mess. There is virtually no way to accomplish what you wish to accomplish in a legislative body. Even if you had motives that were pure, even if you had ideas that were identical to mine, and by that I mean correct ideas, even if you had all that going for you, you get in there and there are 434 other people who all have a different idea of how something should get done. And so then you go about starting the process and you say, I want to see if I can accomplish a compromise of some sort, bring people on board, put together a coalition, get some people in my party, get a few pliable people in the other party, see if we can put something together. And ultimately, you wind up not accomplishing anything close to what you had hoped. Now, you could take the Marco Rubio approach, which is, I tried to get something done, I failed, I misunderstood how much the American public did not trust Congress to actually build the, not so necessarily build the wall, but secure the borders. So I'm going back on my previous approach because I realized that until the border is controlled, we can't do anything. Or you could be like Ted Cruz, who has basically taken the approach to the Senate, which is, I'm going to stand for what I stand for, and I'm going to give speeches about what I stand for, and I'm going to be bold and strong and constitutional and courageous, and nobody's going to work with me. But that's okay, because I stood my ground. Now, I will tell you, if you're President of the United States, both of those approaches can work. Both approaches can work. Either, both, and in fact, you need to be able to employ both. Sometimes you need to be the guy who says, I stand my ground. As George W. Bush once said, I'm the decider. Sometimes you need to be the guy who makes a phone call and says, hey, you know, you guys want to get some coffee or get a beer? Let's talk about this. Let's see if we can figure this out. You call the House Minority Leader and the Senate Minority Leader and the Majority Leaders, and you get them together and say, and the Speaker of the House, and you say, what do you want to do? What do you guys think can work? And you've got to be able to employ both. So I don't necessarily think, and you know, people are convinced that by this point, you certainly must have your candidate locked in, Scott, because next Tuesday you have to vote on this guy. I don't because I frankly think that both of the two top remaining people, I don't count Trump at all. I don't count Kasich or Carson as having a potential for receiving my vote. But if you look at Cruz and Rubio, I think either one of those approaches can work. I think they both have their strengths. I think they both have their weaknesses. But here's what I want to talk about strategy for tonight. In tonight's GOP presidential debate, which I believe is airing on CNN, but I don't get the cable channels here. I'm not sure, but it may be on Telemundo. We do have the basic cable package, and we got like six Spanish language channels that are all part of the basic package. I'm like, wow, you get like an entire college education in Spanish right here on the basic level. So I was watching the Telemundo coverage, news coverage tonight, as they were doing the pre-debate stuff. And I don't speak Spanish. I don't hear Spanish fast enough to understand it well. And so I was seeing that they were showing the whole setup and the stage, and they were interviewing people outside and everything. And it seemed to indicate that they were going to broadcast it. I don't know if that's true. If Telemundo broadcasts it, I'll watch the Telemundo broadcast. I mean, assuming they don't overdub the candidates when their mouths are moving, you know, speaking English, and you hear, you know, por Dios, amo tanto el mundo que dio su hijo único para que todo aquel que cree no muera, sino que tenga la vida eterna. Assuming they don't do that, I think I'm hoping I can watch it on Telemundo. I don't know if I'll be able to do that. In any case, I can watch it online here in my gigantic iMac, which is right next to me. Here's what Cruz and Rubio should do tonight, in my humble opinion. Back in the old days, we used to say that whole phrase, in my humble opinion. We didn't have letters, you know, to summarize everything. Here's what I think they should do. Don't attack each other even once. Never go after. And if you're given the bait to say, hey, Marco said you're a liar, or Ted said you didn't tell the truth, or whatever, completely ignore it, state your position in the most presidential way you possibly can, and then hamstring Donald Trump every time you get a chance. And be direct about it. And go after the flaws in his policy recommendations, in his character, in his in the lies that he's told, in his reversal of going back and forth on positions over the years and even over the months, the weeks. Ted and Marco should get together, you know, in the men's room beforehand and go, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go after Trump. Yeah. Where are the tax returns, Donald? Let me see your tax returns. So I'm going to get into a little bit more about where I think Trump is incredibly weak man. I don't mean just a weak candidate. I mean, what I'm saying here is he may win the nomination, but he's an incredibly weak man, and not just a flawed candidate. He is weak. He is exactly the opposite of what he portrays himself as. And that's the reason why he blusters and roars, because he's a coward. He is weak. So here, Marco and Ted should get together and say, listen, buddy, maybe the next debate around we'll go after each other, but tonight is Donnie's night. In fact, I think they should call him Donnie. Every time they have an opportunity to talk about Trump, they should call him Donnie. They should never refer to him as Mr. Trump. That is the worst. And it's funny because Republicans have this problem where they can't seem to just come right out and say things the way they really feel them. And they feel like they have to say things like, you know, I like Donald, but I think he's not right for this position. Or I like Donald, but I don't like his positions on this stuff. You don't like Donald. Donald is not only trying to destroy you. Donald's trying to destroy your party. Donald's trying to destroy your country. You can't say, I like Donald. You sound like a sissy when you say that. That's ridiculous. You don't really mean I like Donald. What you mean is you want to look polite. And I don't think you should do it. I don't think you should call him Mr. Trump. I don't think you should say you like him. I think you should call him Donnie at all times, in every reference. In fact, repeat his name over and over during the course of your answers. So what am I doing here? Why am I doing this? You say, well, that's not sound like you, Scott. You don't act like that. And I was like, look, he's changed the rules of the game. We are playing badminton. He is playing street rugby. And if you think there's a way to get us back into the badminton court, well, you go ahead and do that, brother. But I don't think there is. And I think that means you've either got to beat him at street rugby or you've got to get out. You've got to go sit on the sidelines. And I don't think we glorify ourselves by saying things that aren't true. I don't think we look like dignified gentlemen by saying things like, I like Donald, but we have a disagreement. That's what Mitt Romney said about President Obama. I like the president. He seems like a nice man. He has a lovely family. How many times have I heard that Donald Trump has a lovely family? Well, you know, I guess after three tries, maybe you start to get good at it. I mean, I don't know his kids and I don't pay enough attention to them to know anything about them. He may have a very nice family. He may not have it. I don't even care. But what difference at this point does it make that Donald Trump has a nice family? The guy cheated on two previous wives. That's a nice family man? I don't think that's a nice family man. What does that do to your kids? What message does that send your kids? What message does it send your kids when you go on the Howard Stern show and brag about not only who you've slept with and the married women you've slept with, but talk with Howard about who you'd like to sleep with and whether or not so-and-so would be good? Okay, so, I'm just getting started. I think that we need to realize that Donald Trump is playing for keeps. He is playing to win. He is playing to be number one. And Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio are playing to be number two. And Ben Carson and John Kasich are just playing. they're like me. Ben Carson and John Kasich are like me when I was 8 years old in right field. When I was standing out there, and I was just like, looking at the grass and chasing bees around and looking at the clouds. That's the sense I get from Carson and Kasich. They just, it's, you know, they're going to play. They like being there. They asked Ben Carson today before the debate. They said, you know, why don't you drop out? And he said something like, well, you know, why do they make a baseball game 9 innings if you're only going to play 2? If there are 50 states to do primaries in, plus I think a couple of territories, well, why would we only participate in 4? That was his answer. He's just playing. I love the guy. I've got his book right over here. That little white book on the top right there is Dr. Carson's book. I think I may have read 2 Carson books. He's a really nice guy, and I mean that. Not like Mitt Romney said about President Obama. Not like Cruz and Rubio say about Donald Trump. I mean, Ben Carson's a really nice guy who needs to get out of the race. And John Kasich is probably a nice guy, although he's a little edgy. He needs to get out of the race as well. What do we need to do if we're Cruz and Rubio? We need to agree we're not going to attack each other. Not tonight. Tonight is not the night to go after each other. We're going to go after, we're going to look as presidential as we can. We're going to look like the people who can beat Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. We're going to look like the men who should be president of the United States, who carry themselves with a bearing that says, I am president of the United States. They used to say when George Washington walked into a room, even people who didn't know who he was knew that he was the general, that he was the president. They knew the moment he walked in the room because of the way he carried himself, that he was a man of substance, not to be trifled with. And I think that's the way Ted Cruz needs to carry himself. That's the way Marco Rubio needs to carry himself. Rubio needs to do what he does very well, inspire people, lift people up, give people a sense of vision for that new American century. I think he does that wonderfully well. Ted Cruz needs to talk about how this country can be great because of adherence to the Constitution and how appointing the right judges to the federal bench will make a difference for generations to come. They should stress their strengths. And when given the opportunity, they should stress Donald Trump's weaknesses and they should go right at his supposed strength. Now, I want to get into a little bit of that. I made a list, and there's no way I can get through this list. So, to summarize, what should Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz do at the February 25th GOP presidential debate? Tag team Trump. That's all they should do. What should Ben Carson and John Kasich do? Be as quiet as possible and withdraw at the end of the debate. In other words, get out. So, Rubio and Ted, tag team, John and Ben, get out. Okay? So here's the deal. What is Donald Trump's strength? If you're going to tag team him, what is Trump's power in this business? Not just his rhetoric, not just his tapping into the rage tapping into people's concern for their own security by saying he'll build a wall and he'll be tough on ISIS or whatever. But his selling point is he's a businessman. He knows how to get things done. He's a smart businessman. He's a good guy to have in there to get stuff done. We're tired. Go watch Donald Trump's videos. He does it better than I do. Donald Trump destroys his own candidacy much better than I do. Go to Donald J. Trump's YouTube channel and watch all these little 30-second videos to see how shallow this guy is, how totally unprepared for the presidency he is. So here's what I ask you. You're a smart business person, right? You are allegedly somebody who's going to fix things because you're a businessman who knows how to get things done. What was one of his biggest businesses? Casino gambling. What is the proverb about casinos? The house always wins. The house always wins, right? Donald Trump ran 4 casinos into bankruptcy. In a business where the house always wins. This has got to be the worst business person in American history. I mean, I'm not just saying that he's like occasionally has a bad idea. He stinks at business, especially a business where the profits are huge. Casino profits are huge, and it's the most magical of all businesses because you've somehow convinced people to come in and give you their money for the chance, the infinitesimally small chance that they're going to win money. You make it a game for them to hand you money. Let's play a game. You're going to hand me money. I'm going to count it and keep it. That's the business you're in if you're in the casino business. So, how do you screw that up? You've got to be the worst business person in the world to have 4 casinos go bankrupt. Now, there are very good business reasons why he did such a bad job. See, what I'm saying is, in gambling, in the casino gaming industry, the house always wins, but not Donald Trump's house. Donald Trump's house lost 4 times big. Collapsed, bankrupt casinos. And here's why. Because of a series of bad business decisions. Donald Trump is a bad business person. He makes bad deals. He makes poor decisions. He goes into a market when it's already on the decline. He lies to the Casino Gaming Commission and tells them that banks are eager to loan him money. When as a matter at low interest rates, at that point, about 7%. In reality, banks were not eager to loan him money, and he wound up having to borrow money at over 14%. Of course, all of his grand plans and the gold-plated fixtures and the extra rooms and the gigantic casino gaming floors, all of that was premised upon 7% money. And then he had to pay 14%. And in a very short period of time, he wound up bankrupting 4 casinos, stiffing people he owed money to, shortchanging contractors. The banks in New York City, there's a piece in the New York Times, I believe in today's New York Times, that notes, among other things, it's really not a hit piece on Donald Trump. There's a lot of stuff about his impact in the city of New York. But one of the things that's mentioned in this New York Times story is that the banks in New York don't want to do business with Donald Trump. You would think that a guy who's a New York real estate developer would have a lot of business with New York banks, that they would be eager to loan him money. Why? Because he's a successful person. Who do banks like to loan money to? Successful people. You know the old story. Banks, the bank doesn't want to loan you money when you need money. They want to loan you money when you don't need money. You know, a banker is the kind of guy who will loan you an umbrella on a sunny day and demand it back when it starts to rain. Donald Trump has lousy relationships, apparently, with the banks in New York City, if you're to believe this New York Times article. And they didn't portray it this way. I'm just noting the way they said it. They're not jumping to do business with him. Why? Because he has a track record of sticking them. He has a track record of cheating them. So you say, what is Donald Trump going to do? Donald Trump, in one of his videos, says, my plan for the economy is that we're going to be prosperous. We're going to be winning because of our beautiful tax plan. And it's immoral to have a $19 trillion national debt. That's not right to put that on our kids. So we're going to win. He says nothing in this video on the economy. The only thing he says is, I'm Donald Trump. We're going to win. We got a beautiful tax plan. So what is his track record in dealing with banks? His track record in dealing with banks is such that they don't want to do business with him anymore. So what's he going to do with our national debt? Is he going to say to the creditors, hey, we just decided we're going to stick you with it. I didn't like the way things were going. I don't like the way you're looking at me. I don't like the way you're treating me. Is Donald Trump going to treat the taxpayer, the bondholders, the treasury bill holders, the same way he's treating the Republican Party, which is, hey, if you're fair with me, maybe I won't stick it to you. But if I think that you're being unfair, I'm going to stick you. And that's what he's doing. So I think Cruz and Rubio should go after Trump in the place where he seems the strongest, but is in fact the weakest. He is a pathetic businessman. He has lied multiple times about his net worth. He refuses to release. Well, he doesn't refuse, actually. He says, this is worse than refusing. He says he's going to release his taxes, his tax forms, but he doesn't do it. Keeps stalling. What does that sound like? Sounds like, you know, Hillary Clinton with her emails. Is, yeah, we're getting around to it. We're doing this. We're sorting through things and blah, blah, blah. The bankruptcies are key to Trump's weakness because they speak of his competency as a business leader. The fact that banks don't want to do business with him is key to Trump. He will say, oh no, the banks love me. The banks want to do business with me. Guess what he told the New Jersey Gaming Commission? The banks are eager to do business with me. He was, let's give him the most possible credit. He was a fool. The best thing you can say about Donald Trump is he was a fool. There are other weaknesses. For example, Trump says he's a great business person. He's going to make this country great again. He's going to make us prosperous. One of the problems he says our country has is that we don't manufacture anything here anymore. You like he always speaks in absolutes. He always says, we never win. We always lose. We don't make anything. None of those things are true. They're all false. The United States actually does make some things, and we make them pretty darn well. But the reality is, Mr. Trump, oh, I'm sorry I said it. The reality is, Donnie, that we don't live in an economy that can be walled off. Perhaps you can put a wall along the southern border and stanch the flow of Mexican immigrants walking across the border. But we don't live in a world where you can wall off the United States. And if you do what you said you're going to do to China and drive a hard bargain, so to speak, with them and hit them with a 35 or 45% tariff on their goods coming into our country, can you say Smoot Hawley? Do a little research. S-M-O-O-T hyphen H-A-W-L-E-Y. The Smoot Hawley tariffs that were passed right as the Great Depression began under the Hoover administration were probably the single greatest factor in ensuring that the Depression would go deep and wide, that it would last for a long, long time, and that would it go deep, because it triggered a reaction from other countries who said, look, you're going to stick big tariffs on our stuff coming into your country? We're going to do the same thing to you. Well, who does that hurt? It hurts American manufacturers. And it also hurts American consumers. Donald Trump is the worst business person that I know of. I literally mean this. I don't think I've ever heard of a worse business person at a level, you know, beyond just the guy who's just trying to figure out how to open his first store or something. But Donald Trump is one of the worst business people I've ever heard of. What are you, an idiot? You're going to take our trading partner, China, and because you don't understand that trade is value for value, that you don't understand that money goes one way, goods come another way, and at the same time, the reverse is happening. You don't understand that, and so you're going to threaten our trading partner with a 45% tariff? What do you think they're going to do? Do you think China is going to sit back and go, oh, well, I guess Mr. Trump, we should give him what he wants because he's so tough. Oh, doesn't he scare you? Remember what a great success he made of those casinos in Atlantic City? He can get what he wants. He's the smartest businessman ever. They are going to look at Donald Trump like he's a clown, which is what he is. He is a clown. He is a terrible business person. He is a coward, and he is a clown. Now you're saying, oh, well, I'm just being nasty. I'm just being rude. Why don't you have the genteel demeanor of the senators who say, oh, my good friend, the gentleman from Pennsylvania. Hey, you want to play street rugby? Let's play some street rugby, Donnie. You want to do that? Let's do that. And somebody needs to talk about that because his record is fair game and his record is pathetic. His policies are fair game and his policies are pathetic. His policies are more likely than any other candidate's in the field, including all the ones who have dropped out already, his policies are more likely to spark the next Great Depression than anything I've heard of. Anybody who thinks that somehow you can cut off the flow of labor, cut off the flow of goods, and start sending this message that there are a certain group of people who are already here who are the good people, but the people outside, we need to fear them. We need to prevent them from coming in. And if they got in here, we need to kick them out. And you say, oh, what are you for open borders? No, no, no. Keep in mind something. 40% of the so-called undocumented workers, which I call illegal aliens, 40% of the illegal aliens in this country overstayed a visa. They didn't swim the Rio Grande. They came through the big, beautiful door, as Donald Trump likes to call it. They came through the big, beautiful door, and they overstayed their visa. And we don't know where they are? And ICE doesn't know what to do about them? We're stymied by this? And putting a wall up on the southern border is going to stop? No, it's not. 40% of the illegal aliens in this country came on an airplane or a boat or something like that. You know, they got here legally. They came through with documents. They were given a visa. They were given, you know, a permission to work here. And then for some reason, we have a system that says, we're going to let you in for a set period of time when you can work, go to school, or whatever it is, but then you have to leave. I frankly don't understand that, and I'm sure there's a lot more I need to understand about how the immigration system works. But what I wanted to clarify is, the wall doesn't stop the problem. And not all the people who are illegal aliens are low-educated, low-income, lettuce-picking drug dealers or drug mules. They're not. A lot of them are grad students. You know, a lot of them are teaching your kid at college right now on the Thursday afternoon, you know, after the lecture of the professor, they have the lab period. And these people are teaching your kids how to do math and stuff. And physics and nuclear science. And we bring people over here from other countries. We train them how to do amazing things. And then we want to treat them like criminals or we want them to get the heck out. That just doesn't make any sense to me. In any case, I think that Donald Trump's treatment of the immigration issue as this facile, let's build a big wall, that solves the problem, is baloney. It doesn't solve the problem. The fact that we even have quotas on different people from different countries. Like, what kind of central planning Soviet Union nonsense is this? Who came up with this? Is this the five-year plan where we're going to have, you know, X number of Mexicans and X number of Vietnamese and X number of Cambodians and X number of Canadians? Like, who sits back in Washington, D.C. and has the temerity, the audacity to think that they can somehow decide how many people should come into this country? Like, we know 5 years from now what the labor needs are going to be in this country. And like we somehow can control that. What happened to the free market people? What happened to the people who believe in liberty? What happened to the people who say, when somebody comes to this country, you come into my country and you want to study calculus, computer coding, nuclear science, or whatever, you come in here and you want to do all that kind of stuff, I would like you to become an American citizen. I don't want you to go back to China or somewhere else and take all that beautiful stuff that you've learned and that magnificent brain of yours. And see, these people are telling us they love the United States of America. And our punishment for them is, you know, if you're Donald Trump, we want you out of here and we want you to never come back. we're not just going to slap you on the wrist and say, look, you broke the law. You need to pay a penalty. There needs to be consequences for that. But I'm glad you love our country. No, you love our country, get the hell out. It just, that doesn't make any sense. And it doesn't make any business sense to treat people who want to work here, people who want to live here, people who want to do business here, countries that want to trade with our companies in countries that want to trade with us, to treat them as if they're the problem. And somehow if we could build a superdome over the United States of America, so that we can protect our economy. Protectionism never works, ever. It does not work. Like I said, go back and, you know, pick up your copy of Amity Schley's book, The Forgotten Man, and read in there about the Smoot-Hawley tariffs and the effect that they had on deepening and lengthening the Depression and turning something into an even worse global situation. We live in a global economy. Donald Trump, even though he has properties in six different countries, doesn't seem to understand this. Or he does understand it. And what he's saying to the people is something that he thinks will just satisfy their zeal because they feel hurt. They feel afraid. He thinks, I can tell you whose fault it is. And we can then clamp down on that. And then we can wall off this country both literally and figuratively, and we will be great again. No. America is not defined by her ever-shifting borders over the last 200 years. That shape you see on the map isn't America. America is not even defined by the English language, though borders are important, though language, a unified language, is important. You realize when the Constitution of the United States was passed, was by the convention of 1787, and then sent out to the states for ratification, the Pennsylvania Assembly, the government of Pennsylvania, ordered 3,000 copies of the Constitution to be printed up, 2,000 in English and 1,000 in German. 1,000 copies of the Constitution were printed in German in Pennsylvania. Why? Because we had a bunch of Germans here, and they didn't speak English too good, and they spoke German real good. And so we printed 1,000, 1/3 of the copies of the Constitution that the state of Pennsylvania printed to prepare for the ratification debates were printed in German. I say that just to say, you don't define the United States of America by the language. You don't define the United States of America by the boundary. What you define the United States of America by is the idea. The idea of individual liberty. The idea of self-governance. The idea of a people who decide the limits of its government and say, this far shall you go and no farther. That's how you define the United States. It is the land of liberty. It is the land of equal justice under law. It is the land of freedom with responsibility. That is America. And this jingoism, this nationalism, this phony populism that Trump has been trading in, which has been effective for as long as autocrats have existed, needs to be clearly rejected by the Republican Party, at the very least by the Republican Party. If nobody else, the Republican Party, better than anybody else, should know this is not what the United States of America is about. And the Republican Party, the party of capitalism, knows that high tariffs and huge restrictions on immigration and throwing out working people, many of whom are actually paying taxes, is not the way to conduct an economy in what we would call free markets. It is not the way to prosperity. Whether you like it or not, it's not an issue of, are there jobs that Americans won't do? I don't think that's the issue. The question is there a free market or not? And we should make it as easy as possible for good people who want to work and who want to be Americans to come here. We don't trust the markets. We say we trust the markets, but we don't really trust the markets. Do you realize that the net flow of immigration between us and Mexico has been to Mexico in the last couple of years because economically the people in Mexico went, you know what? Things ain't so good in the United States right now. I think we'll stay home. Labor flows to where productive use can be made of it. We don't really believe in free markets if we believe in the way Donald Trump is treating the situation, and frankly, a lot of other politicians. So I believe that Marco and Ted should just open up every avenue of attack at the areas where Trump thinks he's strongest. And let me hit on this too. Trump, the truth teller, right? Even the Washington Post, which does these, you know, Pinocchio ratings, evaluated something like 90 different statements that Donald Trump has made. And 75% of them were evaluated as false to one degree or another. Some of them ridiculously so. Ridiculously so. He is not a truth teller. He is not the enemy of the establishment. He is not the enemy of the media. He's the best friend of the establishment because the establishment likes nothing better than two things. Number one, can you win? Number two, will you deal with us? Trump will deal, and Trump portrays himself as a winner. And so the Republican establishment loves him. The media, that this joke that the media is attacking Donald Trump, they're not attacking Donald Trump. They're in bed with him. They're embracing him. They're cuddling with him. They're rubbing their noses together. They're giving butterfly kisses to each other. Donald Trump so desperately needs the media, and the media so desperately needs Donald Trump that if it were legal to do so, he would marry them. In fact, he's probably already cheating on his wife with the media. I don't mean like literally. I mean, it's just, he is telling us that the media is going after him. The media is not going after him. The media is giving him a tongue bath every time they see him. They love him. He is their precious little kitten. And nobody cares more what the media says than Donald Trump. And nobody cares more about the media's polling than Donald Trump does. He lives for the media. He starts every speech with a long list of what the media is saying about him and how the polls are going for him. He is so insecure. One of the least confident politicians I've ever seen. Incredibly insecure. Says he's a strong man, he's really weak. Says he's confident, he's really insecure. Says he's a good businessman, he's really an idiot or worse. What is the word for that? Scoundrel is not the right word. Snake oil salesman, that'd be a pretty good term. All of the strengths of Donald Trump that he would like you to believe are actually weaknesses. And where, when you hear any, it's almost, you can almost take it to the bank. You can say, if Donald Trump says the media hates me, what he means is the media love me. And I love the media. If Donald Trump says, I'm a great businessman, I can fix it, what it really means is, don't look at my tax forms, pay no attention to those bankruptcies in my past. He is not the person he portrays himself as. It is to such an extent, people say, well, you're way too, highwayman, that's a good term. That's a good term. He's a highwayman. It is to this extent. Of the 17 people that were in the Republican field, there were many that I didn't care for. There were a few that I cared for, but there were none without their problems, okay? I can say this categorically. If it had come down to it, I could vote for any one of them except Donald Trump. It's the truth. I could have voted for everybody who was in the field, including Jim Gilmore, but not Donald Trump. It's not just that I have my guy and I think Trump's a threat to my guy. I don't have my guy yet. I think Trump is a threat to the Republican Party, of which I am a member for now. I think Trump is a threat to our economy. I think Trump is a threat to our international diplomacy. I think Trump is a threat to our men and women in arms. I think Trump is a threat to our future prosperity, the reputation of this country. I literally think if they nominate Donald Trump, the Republican Party is, I don't know what it is. It's nothing anymore. I mean, it's almost nothing now. So don't get me wrong. It's nearly nothing now. But if they nominate Trump, the Republican Party is toast. Gone the way of the Whigs. Bye-bye. I want to be very clear about this, because I will not accept this dichotomy where you say, well, if you don't support Donald Trump, because everybody, of course, starts with the assumption that he's got the nomination locked up already. But if you don't support Donald Trump, then that means you have to vote for Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders. And if you don't vote, then it's tantamount to voting for one of them. I don't know why they say if you don't vote, it's tantamount to vote for Trump. I'm not sure how that works out. But anyway, I will, under no circumstances, short of an utter and complete repentance and a legitimate evidence of that repentance on the part of Donald Trump, in all of the areas that I've talked about across the board, they're all deal breakers. And there are some I haven't even mentioned. I didn't even bring up, you know, his positions on abortion, his positions on progressive taxation, his positions on eminent domain, all of them deal breakers for me. I will not vote for Donald Trump, period. I cannot. Back in 2008, John McCain was not my guy. I don't even remember who my guy was in 2008, but obviously he didn't get the nomination. John McCain was not my guy, but I voted for John McCain. Not just because the alternative was worse, but because John McCain could be president of the United States. I would disagree with many things that John McCain does, I'm sure. In 2012, Mitt Romney was not my guy. I met Mitt Romney. I felt like he didn't really want to run for president. He seemed awkward at the time. He seemed like a very nice man who was stuck doing something that he really felt uncomfortable with. But I voted for Mitt Romney. And frankly, in hindsight, I wish he would have won. Certainly things would have been a little different with the economy. Certainly things would have been different with international relations, since he had a better grasp of it then than Barack Obama did, when they were mocking him about as if the old Soviet Union had come back. And Vladimir Putin has once again risen as a strong man. Romney is not my guy, but I voted for him. And I would do it again if I had to. All the 16 other candidates in the Republican field this year, most of them were not my guy or gal, but I would vote for all of them. I will not vote for Donald Trump. Period. It's not going to happen. Under no circumstances, like I said, short of a complete repentance on his part. across the board. And repent means not just to say, I'm sorry, but to turn around and head the other direction in some sort of way that seems legitimate to me. Now, the problem is he is a liar. He's dissembling all the time. And so it's not just that he, you know, lies on a few issues. It is his primary language is dishonesty. And so I don't know how I could even believe that he had repented. So for all intents and purposes, no. Not voting for Trump, period. And I don't have to answer the other question. I don't have to say, oh, well, you know, who would you vote for then? As I've explained before, if I say to you, don't eat the Drano, that's enough. I don't have to have an alternative. I don't have to offer you an hors d'oeuvre. Just don't eat the Drano, okay? Stop. Put the Drano can down. I think it comes in a bottle now. But anyway, put the Drano bottle down. Do not eat or drink the Drano. Donald Trump is the Drano. Please refer to previous Scott Ott podcasts, previous Scott Ott shows, and to my video, Why I Hate Trump, which you'll find is really not about hate. It's just the top 10 reasons why I cannot support Donald Trump. He is like the statue in the book of Daniel that has like a, what was it, a head of gold and a torso of silver and a trunk of, or like legs of bronze and feet of iron and clay. And when you hit those feet, down he goes. Down he goes. And that's what has to happen. You need to come at him directly. You need to come at him unashamedly. You need to come at him boldly. Let's say if you go after him, it only makes him stronger. Okay? What's the risk? He's only been made stronger so far. Nobody's going after him. So he wins one primary with 32%. We don't go after him. And then he wins the next one with the caucuses with 45.9%. We don't go after him. Now we got Super Tuesday coming up. Tuesday, I'm going to go in and I'm going to vote for somebody. Beat him directly. Go right at him. Don't try to be him, but show how everything that he claims for himself is false and cannot be sustained, not just by the facts. Call him out on it. If you're such a good businessman, what's your actual net worth? Let us see your tax forms like every other presidential candidate has to show. How do you explain the fact that in a business where the house always wins, you bankrupted four casinos? How do you explain the fact that you told the New Jersey Gaming Commission that you were going to easily secure money at 7% because the banks were eager to loan to you when in fact no banks were eager to loan to you and you had to borrow money at twice that rate? How do you explain that? Do you even understand how international trade works? Do you realize, does the term Smoot-Hawley tariff mean anything to you? Do you know what happened during the Great Depression? Why are you so committed to repeating the mistakes that they made in the Great Depression? That was a Republican administration that started that, by the way. That was the Hoover administration. And they clung to it, even after it was failing, even after it was destroying the country. Republicans clung to that idea of protectionism. Protectionism in a global marketplace is death. You cannot do it. It is idiotic to try. We are utterly interconnected globally. I think I've said what can be said about this. I don't really think it's rocket science. I'm looking at my list here to see if I left anything else. China, Mexico. Oh, fixing Washington. The guy's going to fix Washington. He's a crony. He's an admitted crony. He brags about how he essentially bribes politicians to get them to do what he wants them to do. His businesses have thrived not only because of eminent domain, but because of special tax breaks. He has used public money, in essence, involuntarily to fund his enterprises. This is the guy we want to send to the White House? I don't think so. He thinks his presence is the answer to everything. That's the only program he has. I'm Donald Trump. Two answers. Number one, I'm going to hire smart people. Number two, I'm Donald Trump. Oh, by the way, on that number one answer, I'm going to hire smart people. Well, Donald Trump, who are the smart people that you surround yourself with from whom you take advice? He can't answer that question. He was directly asked that question and they followed up on it. And his best answer came out was, my wife. I take advice from my wife. No. But in your business life, who do you take advice from? And his answer was, well, advisors can be wrong sometimes. He couldn't list a person. He's the guy who's going to bring smart people to bear on the problems of this country. He couldn't name a single person whose advice he takes. And in fact, he suggested that he takes no one's advice, that he keeps his own counsel. And somehow that makes him virtuous. Well, the history of accumulated wisdom of the world and the proverbs in the scriptures would indicate that a man who keeps only his own counsel and does not take advice is not prepared for war and is not prepared to govern. And Donald Trump is prepared for neither one. He says he will bring people together. He will go to Washington and he will bring people together. How do you like coming together with a person who insults you all the time? Does that inspire you? When you know that there's a guy who literally gets an almost sexual thrill from belittling people, from humiliating people, he's going to bring people together and get them in a room and say, hey, let's all come together, put our heads together and get things done here. No, I'm not even going to come together with you, brother, because you're not my brother. You're going to insult me. You're going to belittle me. You're going to talk about me behind my back. And then if we are able to accomplish something together in conference, you'll take all the credit for it. When's the last time you heard Donald Trump talking about anybody who made it possible for him to succeed or to accomplish anything other than the shallow, oh, I love Nevada. I love South Carolina. I love New Hampshire. My favorite one this week was, we won in the among the, and this is in Nevada caucuses. He was going through all the demographics, which they won. We won among the highly educated. We won among the poorly educated. I love the poorly educated. He literally said, I love the poorly educated. He is such a phony. And if you can't see that, there's a little matter of discernment. You've got to be able to read that when somebody says, hey, the poorly educated voted for me. I love the poorly educated. In fact, the less education, the better. I wish all of America was more poorly educated so that I would have more votes. Unbelievable. Okay, we're almost out of time. In essence, I summarize. He's a blowhard. Phony, unethical, philandering, lying, self-aggrandizing, know-nothing, who would be worse than Hillary Clinton, worse than Bernie Sanders, worse than Barack Obama, because he has no principle but himself, no allegiance to his party's values, his nominal party's values, Republican values, and no moral code but personal victory at all costs, and no accountability to anyone. He, Donald Donnie Trump, is a disaster. Episode 33 of Scott Ott Podcast included audio excerpts from Scott Ott Show, first streamed live on YouTube February 25th, 2016. For more information, visit ScottOttShow.com. Thanks for listening.